Greenhorns, hello. Hello, Greenhorns. This is Greenhorns Radio. Thank you all for joining us once again. Radio for young farmers, by young farmers, on the Heritage Radio Network. Coming to you today, live from the studio in Brooklyn, New York, where there is much afoot. And I can see from where I sit the burgeoning blossoms of the borage and the already bloomed blossoms of the rose campion as the edible world expands here, even in this weird craggy outpost where things are mostly industrial. I am joined from a totally non-industrial place today by James Graves, who is coming to us up in Essex County, New York. James, are you with us?
I am. Thanks for having me, Severin.
Thank you for being there. I wanted to give you a chance just to say who you are and what your farm is and where it is.
As you said, my name is James Graves. I'm a 31-year-old farmer of about 5 years now, I guess. And I've been living in Essex, New York, close to 3.5 of those years. And my partner Sarah and I farm about 100 acres of mostly pasture and hay fields and a couple acres of vegetables. We do a diversity of livestock, chickens, pigs, and beef, and then we, like I said, grow vegetables.
Now, for those of us who are not so literate in the counties of this great state of New York, perhaps you might explain how it is that you have access to such a nice size of farm and where that Essex County is in the world.
Fair question. We landed in Essex in part because we were attracted to the open spaces that still exist up here. Essex County is on Lake Champlain. It's in the Adirondacks, in the Adirondack Park, way up in the northeastern corner of New York. Because it is protected as parkland, there's been limited development pressure here. The chance for us to buy 100 acres, albeit without a house on it, was made possible largely because of a conservation organization called the Eddy Foundation. The land we purchased was encumbered by a conservation easement to our liking, and that, again, was part of what made it affordable.
So you are working in partnership with a foundation who has as its mandate the conservation of land and the maintenance of active farming, I'm assuming. I'm just kind of guessing. And that you are also protected by the low development density permitted by the Adirondack Park system. So there are kind of two layers of, let's not say artificial, but we're going to say unusual regulation on your landscape.
That's true.
Okay, now let's talk about this land. Your land is on the side of the Boquet. How do you pronounce that?
How I say it, Boquet River.
Boquet River. Let's talk about what the land is like and what the seasons are like, especially as how that's informed what you're growing there.
Sure. We are in a mixed, the native terrain is a mixed deciduous forest. We're on very wet soils here, largely clay soils. Our growing season, frost-free season, is roughly from the beginning of June until middle of September. Nonetheless, because we, like you mentioned, the land lies alongside this river, we're in a low-lying spot such that we get frost late in the spring and early in the fall. We think that this is probably going to limit us in terms of propagation of fruit trees and so forth. Nonetheless, we are at a very low elevation here, 250 feet above sea level, as much of the Lake Champlain Valley. We're tempered by the lake to some degree, and because of that low elevation, have a fairly mild winter and productive growing season here.
Well, I don't know about mild winter. I've just been up there recently. I was not... you had me with the glorious vistas, but then I felt that wind And I thought, ah, these are brave young farmers up here in this little young farmer cluster of the Champlain region. Well, you don't have to talk about the weather if you don't want to. Let's talk about the young farmer cluster there and you know, the progress that you guys have been making on your farmstead and kind of like what's going on in the scene and what's that succession been like in your town?
The town of Essex and neighboring towns are some of the very few lands in the Essex County that have supported a lot of agriculture historically. That's a relative density compared to the other side of the lake that has a much wider valley bottom, valley floor next to the lake. There's a lot more agriculture in Vermont. Historically, Essex County has supported a lot more forest industry and even tourism more than farming. Nonetheless, farming does exist here, and some of the open landscape continues to be farmed by people that have inherited farms through the generations. As you alluded to, we are some of a small group of folks that have arrived here recently. We came up inspired and I guess attracted by what's going on at a place called Essex Farm. Farmers there, Mark and Kristen Kimball, have been there since probably 2003, I would guess, and again have been farming a community-supported agriculture operation there, made possible again by some folks, a man named Lars Skulesaid, who's friendly to what's happening in the agricultural world in the realm of organics and small local-scale operations. So we came up and worked at their place. We fell in love with the community and started looking for our own property.
So you see what happens. The success of even just a very few number of people has made an influx happen. And this is a very exciting dynamic to me as somebody who's interested in the wildfire spread of agrarianism throughout this whole land, that, in fact, it works. And if one thing works, then more things start working, and it's kind of amazing. But I'll just hold my enthusiasm in check for a second as we explain how super and phenomenal is the Essex Farm, just for a second, because I want to have them on later, but it'd be nice to just get a tiny little rundown of how amazing Essex Farm is.
From my perspective?
From your perspective. As their ex, what were you, not apprentice?
I don't think they call them apprentices, a farmer, an employee there.
Okay.
For a little over a year. My partner Sarah and I both worked there for a little more than a year during 2006 and 2007 and learned just myriad skills of small-scale agriculture from livestock raising to butchering. We learned to hand milk cows and we learned all sorts of skills associated with driving horses and with working vegetables with horses. They're an inspiring couple. Even if they weren't farmers, I think they would nonetheless be touching a lot of lives because they're both just, Mark and Kristen both are just exciting, very intelligent, outgoing people. And so I think, like so many others, we were drawn to what they were doing and to them and the personalities as leaders. And like you suggested, it's been a source of inspiration for a lot of other farmers, not just ourselves.
So now you're here and you got hooked in, and whether or not it was a conscious decision, you're now, well, it probably was a conscious decision.
I'd say it was very conscious, sure.
You were there, and you got to your land, and your land has no house, and you have spent quite a lot of money on your land, and you have had this experience with the Essex Farm, and you before that were, I'm assuming, doing apprenticeships or ag training in some other place.
That's true. In New Hampshire 1 year, and in the Hudson Valley is where I got my start.
So 2 years of apprenticing, and then 1 year of employee, or a little bit more than a year of employee on a really amazing dynamic farm with super engaged teacher farmers.
Yes.
And there you are on your own land with everything falling to bits. How did you feel?
You visited us. You know how many directions we're going in at one time.
Well, it's what I'm worried about is the many directions that your barn is going in.
So, yes, our some of our structures are in rough shape indeed. Again, we weren't able to afford a farm with
we weren't able to afford a farm.
But we could afford land, and we had the skills and we had the passion to take on this project, as daunting as it is. So do you want the story of how we're putting barns back together, or
well, I wanted, first of all, I wanted the feeling that you felt, and then, yeah, the story of the barns being put back together, that'd be good.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah and I are both have a soft spot for historical structures. Again, another draw to the Champlain Valley, to upstate New York in general, I guess, is the pre-industrial farmscape. The farm that we're living on, that we own, has several old barns with slate roofs, all in need of a lot of attention. Fortunately, we have the carpentry skills and a network of family and friends who willingly come help us, various work parties and volunteer vacations. So we're inspired that this is a achievable goal, and in no way are we thinking that we can't accomplish what we're setting out to do.
So that's a good guiding philosophy now. But let's talk about what the barn was for, and like, I mean, basically, I was so impressed with how big it was and how much stuff was going on inside it. And kind of curious, like, how many times it had been reconceived and retinkered by the folks who were in it before, and now you're there, you know, chainsawing a hole in the silo with a completely different idea.
Sure. Yeah, one of the structures that we've spent the most energy and money on since we landed here is, like you said, the silo. There's a wooden stave silo 20 feet across and about 50 or 60 feet tall. It was one of the most promising structures on the property, believe it or not. It was put up in 1981, we're told, and only used 1 year before the dairy operation that was here sold out and sold their cows. So it was only filled once and emptied, and then it stood empty for 30 years. And when we came along, decided, seeing as how we don't have a house here, why not put this agricultural structure to use as a house, since we have no intention of filling it with silage ever again. So we commenced an exciting adventure in of itself of renovating a silo into a dwelling, and it's where I spent a lot of my winter, and it's turning into a very cozy and inspiring house for us in very soon. We'll be moving in there in the next week or two.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
yeah, you haven't seen it since we've done a lot of the interior work, have you, Severin?
I haven't seen it. I'm on my way.
Good.
I do think it's that we're only days and weeks off from when there'll be film crews buzzing around you trying to expose this fabulous new trend of silo living. It's really the most sophisticated way to live on a property that has no house. And I commend you for
your... We think so, yeah. And I think this should be the beginning of a trend, because it is a very, like you said, it's very sophisticated.
So, you know, a lot of people go to school and to be in a silo, and you're, you know, on a farm living in a silo. We should talk a little bit about what other things are going on the farm, and a little bit about how you're relating with the folks who are around you. Like, what are the, who are the old timers near there, and what's the dynamic that you're finding in the way that you're meeting them and they're meeting you? And maybe you have some insight to share with others who are going kind of further out, further outside the usual places that are closer into the city, that are more used to newcomers, mm-hmm. into communities that are not so used to newcomers and who have seen more of an exodus. Although in your area, there's always been kind of a tourism influence because of the lake, but maybe you have some relevant thing to talk about there. I don't know.
I think it's relevant. Like you said, there are both communities here. There are folks that have settled here in retirement or have made this a home later in life or relocated here, and then there are folks that have that are native to the area that have lived here for generations, their families, and some of those some of each community, I guess, are farmers, and we. We rely on each other for a lot of things. We personally hire our haymaking out to a farming family that has property on our road. That's been a really great relationship, and we buy our grain from other local farmers that have turned to organic methods. That's one of the assets to the area, is that there have been several of the second and third generation farmers here who've switched to organic methods, and we see that as a great asset, because that's the type of grain that we prefer to purchase, and it's readily available within miles, and they've been great at working with us. So yeah, between hiring out custom work and purchasing grain, those are the primary reasons for overlapping with our neighbors. In terms of leaning on other newcomers, like I said, Mark and Kristen use horses, and there have been a great number of instances where, as Sarah and I have just purchased horses, we've been utilizing their expertise and borrowing equipment here and there as we get on our feet with that enterprise.
So it's, you know, it's amazing that how mundane it is, but having someone there who knows how to hay and knows how to use, who knows the land and knows how to use the equipment, and is familiar with that, and having a source of organic grain. I mean, these are the things that folks who are farming in peri-urban, urban, suburban areas. You know, I mean, major craze in Oakland, what came from the first bulk purchase of organic chicken feed that was distributed out of a biodiesel station.
Uh-huh.
You know, like having to reinvent that network of services and goods once it's gone is so hard. And having it to having a functioning web of agricultural commerce to plug into, obviously, makes our lives a lot easier.
And by no means are we, you know, wealthy in that regard. You know, there are a lot of vacant farms around here and a lot of infrastructure that no longer exists. But, you know, like you said, there are elements of it, and we're thankful for those.
Well, I know that your region used to have a mining history, and that there was agriculture associated with that mining. Maybe you could talk about the infrastructure that you are missing just briefly before we talk about your house project.
Sure. Some of the things that we travel furthest for are just basic agricultural supplies. We don't have a feed store or farm supply store anywhere within a half an hour. We have to go a good 45 minutes, and a lot of that infrastructure is across the lake in Vermont.
And there's no bridge.
And there is no longer a bridge. So it's a ferry ride. It's, you know, juggling ferry schedules and, you know, hours of operation for going into the different farm supply places. It's, you know, making a lot of phone calls to track down whatever supplies or minerals or you know, different things that we're looking for. And that is a bummer that we have to travel so far. There used to be, as you would expect, a farm supply store just, you know, right a couple miles from the farm here. But, you know, as farmers left the area and numbers of farms dwindled, that was no longer a profitable business, I guess.
Well, it seems like profitable business is coming back, and I'm gonna have a whole bunch more of this Essex posse up on the radio. I think they're so well. When I went up there, I was like, "This is it. I'm gonna move here and farm here. This is it."
That's great.
Which is a feeling I feel quite frequently, actually, in visiting.
We would love to have you.
Thank you kindly. That's a feeling that I'm starting to feel quite often in my travels and going around to various outcroppings of the kind of young farmer territories, finding fabulously brazen and really, they've got the muscles to back it up, people. And everywhere, people are just like stamping their foot and saying, you know, here, it's happening here. This is it. This is where it's going on.
It's happening a lot of places, isn't it?
It's happening a lot of places. And, you know, your epicenter over there is pretty friggin' glorious. I just wanted to give you a chance to describe very briefly, as a closing, your farm name and how you're bringing that spirit to bear in dealing with this housing problem that you have.
That's an interesting question. Well, our name Full and By Farm draws on an old nautical term. I guess perhaps because of my love for sailing, I had to have that in our name because I do miss it. So being grounded on the farm, Full and By is an old term meaning close hauled or sailing as close to the wind as one can while maintaining full sails. And it is our endeavor here to farm as naturally as we can, you know, minimizing our impact on the ground while nonetheless bringing in a bounty for us in our community, much like you know, sailing under nature's wind and not starting up the engine to get where you need to go.
That's it's such a fantastic intention, and it seems like so many goodnesses may spring from an intention as noble as that.
Let's hope.
and living under the name of it, I think, you know, it's like those colleges, old school colleges, where they have these things all scrolly up on the archways of their entrance, and everybody has to walk through it every day, and, you know, oh yes, this is the sacred duty that we bring to this work.
Yeah.
Intention is quite powerful. And even when the winds blow hard,
as they do here often,
you keeping your sails up and out and, seizing upon that force, is a great inspiration to us all. I thank you, James, so much for your work, and for being here today. And
thanks for having me and thanks for that, those words of, approval and blessing in a way, I guess.
Well, you got it. we are approving and blessing and in complete delightment about this, the Young Farmer Movement, which goes on all the time, but which you can listen to on the radio. Thank you so much, James. Thank you so much, listeners. Thank you so much to our sponsors here in Brooklyn, the Fairway Market. Thank you, thank you, thank you to heritageradio.com. Please, all you people of the northern lands, come to our Chautauqua in Maine in August. We will be posting it information. So far, we have seaweed workshops and stonemasonry workshops. I can't talk about it now because we don't have any time, but there's many, many more informations on our blog, on our website, in our network, on our mailing list. Please be a part of our world. We'd love to be a part of yours. and talk to you again next Tuesday. Sorry, next Thursday at 2 p.m. Every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Oh, golly. It's Thursdays at 2 p.m. Every Thursday at 2 p.m. We're here. Where are you?
Yes, I'm here.